This is 4:55 on Friday, November 22nd.
Okay, good morning. So, people are getting into this proxy project and sort of running into problems, just to be expected. That's where the fun begins.
Yeah, proxy's fun.
So, but I want to discuss something with you. Currently, I did thank you for everybody who pestered me about the Chapter 8 assignment. Really, I do thank you, because sometimes these things don't happen unless you pester me. So, I did post it last night, and it is currently due on Wednesday the 4th. And the only reason for that is to give the TA time to look at it before the exam on the 9th. So I really feel like I can't slide it any more than that in order to make sure that he has time to give you some feedback. What I could do is I could slide this a couple of days. I could slide the proxy project, well, more than a couple of days. I could slide that to Wednesday of finals week. Would that be helpful? Okay, I can do that. But you need to know that I've talked with Hawk, and his intention is that he wants to talk with each of you about this. So if your intention is to sort of submit it and leave town, then you're going to need to turn it in sooner so that he can have a chance to go over it, because this is one of those ones where he really needs to have your assistance in seeing how it works. So I will do that, but I will modify the project description to say, and you have to give a demo and you have to arrange it with Hawk and don't leave town before you do. Okay? So I think that's good, because that lets you concentrate more on studying for the exam in that early time. On the other hand, you can also get a lot of it done during this next week, I think. So that's good. Second thing, people are starting to have some code working and starting to have it sort of not doing the right thing, not loading pages, and so forth. And there are a couple tools that I wanted to show you about for dealing with that. And I'll see how well I can do at it. In Chrome, there is something called Developer Tools, maybe? Or maybe I don't have a recent enough version of Chrome. Tools, there it is. Tools, Developer Tools. I was right. Okay. So the developer tools in Chrome can be used for a lot of different things, including cascading style sheets and a whole bunch of HTML stuff that is not really the subject of this class. But hopefully, yes. That's too small to see. Oh, come on. All right, cool. And turn off the lights because it's kind of gray. So what this does is it tells you what you're getting, where you're getting it from, what the HTTP method is, get, what the return status is, what the type of it is, who did it, how big it is, how long it took to get the answer. All right? And notice that this page, I did a refresh on this page, it has one image in it that also had to be gotten. Where it came from this calendar HTML, how big it is, and how long it took, and it sort of shows you at what point it made the request and what point it came back. And so I'm not going to go over the whole language of this report that it gives you, but you can see it might be very handy For example, if you're loading a page and you're only getting part of the answers to, you know, if you're only getting some of the objects, if other ones are not showing up, it will show you things that have not yet been fully received, and you can figure out which one those are and then sort of hone in on those as being the problem ones. All right, so that could be very helpful. This is in Chrome. In Chrome, it's just built in, right? You go to the menu, you go to Tools, you go to Developer Tools, and you get that. In Firefox, there's a similar thing called Firebug, which is an add-on for Firefox. You actually have to install it. So you go to the add-ons page. On mine, it's top level. It varies. They move it around on the menus depending on what operating system you have and what version of Firefox you have. But you'll find it somewhere. Add-ons. Search for Firebug. Firebug is there. You can install it. Doesn't take very long. And then you typically have to restart Firefox in order to have it work. Yes. Okay, and where is it? There it is. What's that? F12. Huh. Oh, you guys are so good. So F12. Same thing. Gives you a lot of stuff for doing stuff that's not very relevant for what we're doing, but here it's the net menu. If I say okay, and similar thing, right? Except a little bit different user interface. Tells you what the headers this is maybe better or easier to see what to do. Tells you what the browser saw for the headers, what headers it sent, what headers it received. It shows you what it has gotten in the way of a response. It shows you how long it took, who it talked to, when it made the request. And okay, so you get the idea that if what you've got is somebody in the middle on your HTTP request, this is going to give you a good picture about what the browser is seeing. And you can go look at the headers and see if you've made a mistake in the way the headers are represented or anything like that. Okay? So I think that will be helpful. Any questions about that? We'll go back to something that's bright enough, I think you can read it. So I use this all the time, and I use it not only for debugging network stuff, but when I'm writing HTML, I use the HTML pages. When I'm doing cascading style sheets, right? It's just a great tool and the amazing thing is that it's only, you know, a few tens of kilobytes big. It's an amazing bit of programming. But we're going to go back and talk about security for the rest of the day. Alright, so last time we talked about the techniques for message integrity on authentication. Today we're going to talk about applying those to securing email, and we'll talk about how SSL works. That's probably all we'll get through. So we're going to go through sending confidential email, sending authenticated email, and sending confidential authenticated email. And it's all pretty straightforward. So the graphical language is maybe harder to understand than the full intent of the thing. So what happens? Alice makes up a symmetric key and encrypts it with Bob's public key. All right. So here's what the exam questions about this stuff are like. There, suppose you want to authenticate something. How do you use public key cryptography? And that boils down to which public key and which private key will you be using to do that? Suppose you want to enter something that is confidential. Which public key and which private key on which end, you know, all that stuff. So these pictures, although they're a little bit complicated, they have really a very simple message to tell. So we use a symmetric key in order to have good performance. We use a public key in order to be able to communicate with somebody for whom we have not have been able to previously exchange the symmetric key. And so we pick our symmetric key, we encrypt it with the public key of the other end, so this is confidentiality, right? You're encrypting with somebody else's public key. We encrypt the message with the symmetric key because that's big if we want it to go fast. We concatenate those two things. That's the form of plus that we're talking about. We send it over the network. We tear them apart. This is a new bit of graphical language that says tear them apart into the encrypted message part and the encrypted symmetric key part. Decrypt the symmetric key, use it, and we get the message. All right. So it's pretty simple. Sender authentication. What do we do? This is a digital signing problem. Digital signing problems work by using the sender's private key on the signing side, using a cryptographic hash function previous to that to avoid having to encrypt a lot of stuff with a private key, concatenating again the message with the signature, and tearing them apart and comparing. Alright? Basic stuff. And if we want authentication and secrecy, you combine them, right? Encrypt the symmetric key as before, use it to encrypt the signed message, and send it over there. Alright. It's not as complicated as the pictures, right? But if you understand the principles, right? The principles are very simple. Where do you use the private keys and the public keys for the various purposes, and how do you incorporate a symmetric key? Yes?
So when you are signing something, what do you actually sign it with? Because you said you use the private key, but how does that signing actually work?
So how does that work? Okay. So Okay, it's worth going over this. This is the private key, right? Alice's private key. Signing is encryption of the thing in the parentheses. So think of this as a parameter, right? So this is encryption of the message hash.
So she's using her private key to...
So she uses her private key to encrypt the message hash.
Right? So how do you decrypt that?
So how do you decrypt that?
With her public key.
Right? Right? Because you can use the private key followed by the public key, or the public key followed by the private key. Yes, it's symmetric. Very important. Symmetric. I mean, and so the only question is, when you're doing secrecy, which one do you use first? And when you're doing signing, which one do you use first? But the other thing that people get confused about, and be careful about this, I would say, people are confused about this, they just don't remember it in the context of exams. The private key is private, right? That means that Alice is the only one who has it. So it would never make sense for Bob to do anything with Alice's private key. Bob only uses Bob's private key and Alice's public key. Okay? So that's, if you remember that, then sort of all else follows. In some ways. Okay, and remember, the hash of the message is not the message itself. It's a digest of the message. It's much shorter than the message, and you can't figure out the message from having the hash of the message. All right. So that's the overall plan of that. The classical example of an application that does that is something called PGP, Pretty Good Privacy. It was invented by a guy named Philip Zimmerman in the early to mid 1990s as a protest against, partly as a protest against the plans of the United States government to require people using good cryptography to provide the keys to the government. This is a Bill Clinton era thing. And he said, well, you know, we can make up our own keys and use them and share them with each other and have secure communication. The government tried to prosecute him for this, but eventually gave up and recognized that, in some sense, the cat was out of the bag and the stuff was here to stay. Instead, they went after other... We're now learning they went after other ways of learning these things, breaking the systems, rather, breaking the overall systems instead of the cryptography or the keys, going around the places where keys are used to get things directly. I heard recently that somebody was claiming that the NSA was spying on the traffic between Google's different data centers, which was unencrypted. So if you had your data encrypted in Google, and it was encrypted by keys owned by you, that's fine, and Google may have it stored there. But just the direct communication between the Google data centers might not have been additionally encrypted. What's his name? Eric Schmidt, who is the chairman and former CEO, was very upset about this. He made public comments about that. Okay. So this is PGP. There's another just to confuse the innocent. PGP is actually a product of a company, but there's a compatible open source thing called GPG, GNU Privacy Guard, that works in similar ways and provides add-ons for mail programs and so forth that will do this sort of stuff. Okay, but that's application to application, mail client to mail client in some sense. What about the layer below that? What about essentially transport layer? That's another place that you could provide security, both encryption and authentication. And that's what this SSL thing is about. SSL stands for Secure Socket Layer. It was invented by Netscape, again, in the late 1990s. It got standardized as something that's now called TLS, Transport Layer Security. And so this is probably not the best thing to say that you've learned. Better to say you've learned TLS than SSL, although people continue to talk about it this way. Okay, so it's... we'll see what it is. But it's what is underneath HTTPS. And it's a way for particularly clients to authenticate the servers that they're talking to. It has the capability for servers to authenticate clients as well, but none of us go out and get the necessary certificates to allow that. And it's not clear that if we did, we would be sufficiently careful with the information that needs to be kept secret to actually have it mean anything by the time. So the browser, the servers don't rely on client certificates. So TLS, yes, is the modern name for this thing. It provides confidentiality, integrity, and authentication in both directions, in theory, but in one direction in practice. Right there. And it's implemented as a client-side library over top of TCP. Okay? So remember where the client operating system boundary is in this picture. It's right across here. So TLS is implemented with libraries on the client side and provides an application programming interface for applications to use. Now, unfortunately, part of the problem with TLS is that it is so flexible in its design that it's very easy for clients to use it in ways that actually are not very secure. So think about it. We're saying application SSL. The application here is both the web client and across the network on the web server. They are both using the SSL in this way. And there are many different implementations of these libraries, of course. It's only a specification. They all have to be very flexible. And what happens... not ready for that yet. What happens is that because there are so many options, the two sides negotiate something that they can both agree on and they both support. And what tends to happen then is they get to the least common denominator, security. And it turns out that most websites, even important ones, are running Microsoft's version of this, which tends to negotiate low security parameters for the connection. which is quite unfortunate. And it happened, the problem occurs both ways. It occurs with using Internet Explorer will force even good servers to use bad encryption, and using a Microsoft-based web server will force good clients to use bad encryption. There were stories about this, and people had researched this space recently. So that's the big issue with SSL, is that it's sort of this wide open space, and based on things that you do in the clients, you can use it well or use it not so well. Okay, so what are the issues associated with that SSL tries to address independent or going beyond what we talked about for the email case, right? This was the email case. And what you, if you ponder this picture a little bit, you'll see that the problem is that Bob, over here on the other side of the internet, doesn't really get anything from Alice until Alice has sent the whole message. And that's a problem for anything that's interactive, right? Because you need to build something over top of this sort of general scheme that allows you to have interactive. I send you something, you're able to interpret it, and send me back something that I can interpret and that we can authenticate and provide confidentiality. The other thing that is not part of this protocol is how we're going to use certificates. This already assumes that Bob and Alice know each other's public keys, right? And SSL tries to address also the issue of how do certificates get distributed and used as part of the protocol, as instead of being outside the protocol. So we're going to go through a derivation of something that the authors have called toy SSL, which addresses some of these problems. And then we'll talk about real SSL. So the overall structure of creating an SSL connection, it sort of happens at the same point when you create the TCP connection. So it's, you know, TCP three-way handshake followed by the SSL handshake. You can't get started until TCP is started, but then you do it. So you exchange certificates and authenticate each other. You derive keys to be used during the course of the connection. You transfer data with the ability to encrypt and decrypt chunks of the data, encrypt, decrypt, and authenticate chunks of the data, and finally close the connection. And it turns out that, amazingly enough, this is the kind of thing that people learn only over a period of time. It turns out that it's important to securely close a connection. You can't just sort of disappear and have it, you can't define a protocol that says disappear and have it be secure. Because, think about it, what if the protocol that you were running over top of this said something like, what if it had, say, cancellation in it, where I say, do something, and I expect you to say something else, and then I say, I didn't mean that after all, or something, right? Then, if somebody could break the connection before the I didn't mean that after all, we have an insecure situation. So connection closure actually has to be designed to be secure as well. Okay, so how's it go? (coughs) The way this works is that SSL starts out by creating something called the master secret, and this is just a stepping stone along the way to having a set of secrets that are used for different purposes in the protocol, and that's done because it's just generally considered bad practice to use a key for multiple purposes. So they actually generate a set of keys to be used for the different needs in the protocol. Oh, it says so right there. Okay. So, public key certificate, then use Bob's public key to send him the encrypted master secret, which is then used to generate the four keys that are needed. So there's a set of keys that are used, that these are symmetric keys. So they're keys that are used for sending and authenticating from client to server, and keys for encryption and authentication from server to client. Okay, so we can't continuously encrypt because there's no place to put the message authentication code if you do that until you get to the very end of the string. So you have to break things up into chunks that can be separately authenticated. Each chunk is called a record, and each record carries a message authentication code. Oh, notice just another point of confusion in computer science literature. Here, MAC is message authentication code. In Chapter 5, it was media access control. Right. So we can't even keep the terminology consistent through one whole book. Right. It's just too bad. But the point of this is that the receiver can interpret each record separately. You have to know where the boundaries are, and so actually we put a length field into the records. How do we prevent replay? We need to put sequence numbers into the records, and so we put a sequence number on the record, and we actually compute the message authentication code over both the sequence number and the data. No sequence number field. Oh, yes. Yeah, we don't have to put the sequence number into the record. We know the position, so we can compute the MAC over it. Okay. But we do need nonces to do that. How to prevent truncation? Separate data type for closure. So explicit closure becomes something that we can put a MAC on, as opposed to implicit closure of just going away. The client can then treat the two things differently. Okay, so, and remember, there's a TCP handshake ahead of this. So this, you know, suggests why SSL connections are maybe a little bit slower to get set up than regular ones. It takes TCP round trip, SSL round trip, another SSL round trip, and then we're sort of able to go. So, like I said, SSL supports negotiation of protocols, and together they agree on them before they begin data transfer. What are the choices what public key algorithm, what symmetric key algorithm, what MAC algorithm. See, I said there's lots of flexibility here. This is all, I think these come, yes, these come packaged in certain packages, right, so that they're, you know, you don't pick these completely independently, you only pick them as a package. But anyway, some are better than others, and you want to pick good ones. I should look up the reference for that for you. Just a refinement of what we did before. Again, the importance of nonces. So the server chooses from what the client offers, sends back its certificate and its own nonce. Client verifies the certificate. So how does a client verify the certificate? What is it doing there? It's essentially checking the certificate authority signatures in the certificate, perhaps through multiple levels, right? The certificate might include, you know, it might include the server's own certificate, it might include a certificate for the company that owned the server, it might include a certificate authority certificate for that certificate, and so on. So there might be multiple levels to chase here. But once it's verified, then well, a couple things could happen. Suppose the certificate is not verified. What happens? There's the theoretical answer and the practical answer.
Don't really know who it came from?
Well, you don't really know who it came from. So what happens? What?
Close the connection.
Close the connection. There's my theoretical answer. What really happens? You've all seen this. A window pops up and says, cannot verify the certificate. Do you want to continue? Right? And if you're careful, you think about that question quite a lot before you say yes. So, for example, if I'm going to a WSU website, like facilities operation, for the first time, and it gives me that message, has done so, I'm probably more willing to accept that certificate than if I go to my bank and it does that. I get really annoyed with my bank because every once in a while my bank gives me a bad certificate. Now this is an important point. What is the bank doing by giving me a bad certificate? It's training me to click accept the bad certificate. That is not a good thing. That's why I get annoyed with the bank, because it's damaging its customers, not just for their relationship with the bank, but for with everybody else as well. Security is not just about the technology, it's about the people. So. Sorry, soapbox, time to get off the soapbox. Of course, the other possibility I have when dealing with the bank is to say, no, I won't accept that certificate, which I sometimes do too. Depends on where I am and a number of other things, but the theoretical answer would be better. Close the connection, but I don't think people would tolerate it. The problem with WSU facilities operations is that they don't spend the money to get a certificate that's signed by an official certificate authority. But it's also a low risk thing. Yeah?
Are there free ticket authorities?
Well, that's... I don't know. Certainly, there are things called self-signed certificates.
Yeah.
So you can sort of be your own certificate authority, but then you run into this problem of except that you can accept, you know, that's what's going on with our facilities operation, is that it's a self-signed certificate. You accept it once, and then you... And as long as it's legit the first time, then it continues to be good subsequently. I don't know of any free certificate authorities that I would trust. That isn't even really the question, is it? The real question is, are there any free certificate authorities that Firefox, Google, and Microsoft trust? That's the real question. Because we don't get any choice. We don't have any choice about that. Which is kind of scary. All right. So, we've verified things. We extract the secrets. And then we're all ready. Oh, then, this is an interesting point. Up to this point, what's happened? We've sort of exchanged a bunch of stuff with the server that all has to do with the protocol itself, but we haven't done anything from the application yet. So we haven't really revealed anything yet. And so even though we've had quite a lot of conversations here, we haven't actually authenticated anything yet. Or we haven't authenticated everything to the degree it needs to be authenticated, but we're able to do that at the point where we reach the end of this without having actually caused any trouble, because we haven't shared anything that matters yet. So that's the Mac at the end thing. So it prevents this particular attack where the client offers some weak algorithms, a man in the middle deletes the stronger ones and forces the choice of a weak algorithm. Although, as I said, the Microsoft particular servers have this tendency to choose weak algorithms anyway. Another thing about nonces, of course, and so this is what it ends up looking like. This is all done, remember, by that library. It's not done in the operating system. Computes the max, adds the record headers, does the encryption. Much too much detail. I don't expect you to learn all this detail. This is above and beyond. Deriving keys, we talked about producing master secrets. I have no idea what this line means, because of resumption TBD. I don't know what that's all about. But anyway, you take that master key and you produce the other stuff. All right, so I think that's where we'll stop today. Next time we will talk about IPsec. So notice the plan here. Securing email was something that happened at the application layer. This was at the transport layer. And now we're going to talk about security implementations at the network layer. Okay? And unfortunately, it doesn't seem to me that any of these substitute for the other ones in all cases. You sort of have to be prepared to do some combination of these in order to achieve what you really want to do. So I can't just say go off and learn one of these things and that will be the that will be the answer. All of these are part of the environment and all of them have legitimate roles. Okay, have a great break. I will change the assignment due date, the proxy project due date to Wednesday of finals week.
Will it be up today?
What?
Will the assignment be up today?
The assignment is already up.
It's already up, okay.
Yeah, the Chapter 8 assignment is due on Wednesday before finals week.
Chapter 8 was not up.
The hyperlink is broken.
There's no hyperlink.
You're right. I saw that. I did it, but I didn't turn on the hyperlink. All right. Well, it will be there in a few minutes. Sorry. Gee.
Always that last step.
It's always that last step, yes. I wrote it, I put it there. I just didn't. There's one character mistake that needs to be changed to turn it on.
So,